My name's Jeff Kurtz. I'm running for state representative from House District 83 that encompasses most of Lee County. I was born in Fort Madison. I've lived here most of my life. I have been married 39 years in August. We raised three kids here in the area. And I'm running because, quite frankly, I was asked to run, and I started looking at the state, and I thought that I had a lot to contribute.
When you look at someone saying, hey, Jeff, you should really consider this, you should, but some might say, you know what, no way, there's no way I want to mess with what's going on in Des Moines. What is it that made you say, you know what, this is something I would really like to get involved in?
For 10 years, from 2004 to 2014, I was state legislative director for the Brotherhood of Locomotive Engineers and Trainmen. We're part of the Teamsters, and I spent a lot of time traveling around the state. I spent a lot of time traveling around the country talking about various issues, transportation issues, but I ended up getting into environmental issues. I worked with a gentleman by the name of Steve Falk in Des Moines for about a dozen years, and we worked on issues having to do with railroads, because railroads are ecologically sound. I saw how that tied in with economic development, how it ties in with what I think is going to be the new economy, what we're talking about as far as clean and renewable energy. And so I thought, I've pretty much got a lot to offer. And also, I've been retired for 3.5 years, and so I'm going to have time to put into this.
What are those qualities and characteristics that you would bring to the office?
Well, I think I have experience doing things that would naturally translate into being a legislator. Like I said, I was state director for the Brotherhood of Locomotive Engineers and Trainmen for 10 years here in Iowa. I worked on issues on a state and a national level. I testified at the Department of Labor in front of 35 assistant regional administrators for OSHA. Originally, it was supposed to be a 10 to 15 minute presentation that turned into over an hour because of the questions they had. I've done things like I helped develop the Brotherhood of Locomotive Engineers and Trainmen's national plan for high-speed rail, which was actually the brainchild of our Indiana chairman, but he asked me to come along and help him with it. So I think that I've got enough experience to get into things like the present proposal, or what looks like the proposal for tax cuts is going to be.
And that's what I was going to say. I wanted to get into some of the issues now, and you bring up one of the ones that is right off the bat. It's been talked about. It's kind of the reason we're in overtime. The Republican-controlled House, Senate, and the governor's office wanted to create a tax cut plan. It sounds like they've reached an agreement. It's moving through the final processes. Now, what is your take on the idea of cutting taxes at a time when departments are also being cut?
We've tried this before. We've got a model in Kansas where it didn't work, and from what I understand, a lot of this is going to be like Kansas. And in fact, I'll point out one issue, what they call the pass-throughs. That could be a real landmine that these guys step on that they don't realize. Initially, when Kansas did it, they figured that they would have 191,000 taxpayers file under this pass-through plan. They ended up having 333,000. This is something that, when they say $1.3 billion, that's the last figure I heard for this tax cut, it could turn into a lot more than that. And we have to target these tax cuts so that this money stays in Iowa, you know, or the vast majority of it does. Otherwise, it does no good. One of the things that I read about for this pass-through, that one of the people in Kansas that qualified for it was, he said he got $6,000 back from the pass-through, took his family to Cancun. How did that benefit Kansas? And this is the things that we have to look at. I'm for targeted tax cuts, targeted tax credits, but they have to make sense.
And kind of along those lines, too, I mean, Iowa has always been looking for tax credits and tax incentives for new business, new industry and stuff. I mean, right here in Lee County, you had the fertilizer plant that has been much talked about of whether it was a good idea to offer that or not. Where do you stand when it comes to, we've been talking about kind of the more individual side, but when it comes to business tax credits and those incentive packages that the state produces?
Like I said, they have to make sense, and we have to create good-paying jobs so people live in this state, and they spend their money in this state, and they spend their money with the small businesses in this state, and especially this region. Of course, if I win, I will represent Lee County. We have a tendency to – maybe I should talk about the fertilizer plant. They have – what's called the pilot program,
payment in lieu of taxes.
Payment in lieu of taxes, thank you. And it's a graduated scale. It goes every 5 years where the payments increase. And it's the county board has decided that that is going to be treated just like any other tax money. That's good. We don't want to create corporate welfare with these tax cuts. So that's what we have to look at. And like I said, as far as I'm concerned, if we're going to do it in this region, I want as much money as we can possibly get to stay here.
Anytime somebody's elected to an office, there are certain issues that really stand out to them. I mean, you have to cover so many things if you're in the state legislature and so many bills come before you. But you can have a couple of those, like, these are my wheelhouse. These are the areas I really want to focus on. If you're elected and you serve in Des Moines, what are those key issues that you're really going to focus on?
The first thing that I would focus on was the gutting of Chapter 20. I would like to see us go back to the pre-2017 language. That was created by a Republican administration. It worked well for over 40 years. Right now, we've got from the current language in the gutting of Chapter 20, the only thing that's negotiable is a very small raise.
And when we're talking about, for people that may not be familiar, Chapter 20 is the collective bargaining rights for public employees.
That's correct. And people don't realize how much public employees really contribute to a local community. I mean, when you start cutting jobs or start cutting money to public employees, you're going to impact that community. Let me take the prison, for example. I've talked to correctional officers, and they're so understaffed right now. They're working with fewer people, and they have four times the area that they had before to watch. With the present form of Chapter 20, the only thing that they can legally bargain for, if their employer doesn't let them, is the small raise. They can't even talk about their own safety, which is just mind-boggling to me, because who knows more about being a correctional officer than a correctional officer? Certainly not a bureaucrat.
Would you take it back to before to say there's a certain list of that has to be negotiated? I mean, how would you reshape Chapter 20 after? Because in essence right now, I mean, you have the local school, several local schools have just said, we're moving everything to a handbook but raises. How would you reshape Chapter 20 if you were elected?
It should be pretty easy to do. Just go back to the language pre-2017. And you don't want to waste a lot of time on this. They didn't take too much time when they gutted it. And they certainly didn't look at things that they should have looked at when they gutted it. I say just take the pre-2017 language and pass that through, and then get on to some really important issues.
And then it probably, I would assume, your take is similar when it comes to the certification votes before every contract, before a start of a new contract. Would you go back and take those where you don't have to have those recertification votes every time?
That's just a drain on union resources. It makes no sense to do that. The Chamber of Commerce doesn't recertify every year. This is, I don't understand this. This is just people that don't like unions is all it is. It's a waste of resources. And like I said, I think it should just go back to pre-2017 language and get rid of all the other stuff that doesn't need to be in there. We don't like a bureaucracy in government. Why should we want a bureaucracy as far as what unions have to do, what employers have to negotiate? It makes no sense.
You mentioned another thing you want to work on is bringing jobs into Lee County in Southeast Iowa. What are some ways that, if elected, you would work to bring new jobs, to bring quality jobs into this area?
I have been saying that I think we're entering a new economy, information age and clean and renewable energy age. We have, here in this area, we've got Siemens, but we've also got Hennigus here in Keokuk. They make Tesla parts. We have the BNSF Railroad, which is ecologically sound transportation, but very sound as far as the ecology. We have Griffin Wheel, which makes wheels for locomotives and railroad cars. We have, and I just found this out recently, we have DuPont's, who makes a material for something called Tedlar that is actually on the back sheets of solar panels. I would advocate for those industries. I know people, not just around the state, but around the country, that know a lot about this and try to spur more development in that area, which in turn I think would help all the industry around here if we had clean and cheap and renewable energy.
Does that get into the tax incentives, the tax credits and such that we talked about earlier when it comes to the business side?
Yes, it does. But it would have to make sense. I mean, we want to make sure, like with Siemens, right now, Iowa, I think 36% of our energy needs are fulfilled by wind energy. That makes a lot of sense to help with that. But what we don't want to do is create corporate welfare. What we want is good corporate citizens that eventually are going to be paying their fair share of taxes so we can have things like good schools. We can have things like good roads. Our teachers, our public employees can make a good living.
You mentioned early on another issue that has come up in Iowa. You had the bill regarding water quality and such. What was your take on what's been going on in Des Moines when it comes to kind of the lessening of regulations and the water quality bill that was passed?
From what I understand of the water quality bill that was passed, there were several mandates in there that were unfunded. And this is, they didn't even require testing of the water. This was just something that you could show that you tried to do, but it really has no effect on water quality. I mean, how important is that to people? When you don't realize what comes out of your tap until all of a sudden you have a problem. And to pass a bill like this where it looks like you're doing something, but you're not, just seems ridiculous. I mean, they shouldn't even have spent any time on this.
One of the biggest discussions that always happens at the state is when it comes to education funding. That is where the most of the state's money is going. School districts, administrators will say, we really need 3-4% growth in funding to be able to even just continue. And they're getting 0.5% and 1%. If you were in Des Moines, I mean, how do you make that push? How do you find the money to more adequately fund schools if you think they need more funding?
Well, I do think they need more funding. In fact, since the Republicans took partial control of state government until 2015 to 2016, the share of the K-12 programs, which used to be close to 46% of the budget, has actually shrunk to under 41%. So we are cutting funding no matter what anyone says. We are doing that. Everything that we do springs from education. Take, for example, our state universities. Look at what's been developed by research at state universities. Look at the Leopold Center at Iowa State. They have come up with some excellent programs as far as farming. State universities have helped develop the internet. They've helped develop personal computers. And right now, we're on a course to cut funding for them. So actually, it's not just just K through 12, but it's our state universities. I would like to see us expand education for the trades. I've talked to an administrator here in the area, and this was his big push. He told me, he says, not all of our kids should go to college. And I think I'm uniquely qualified for that. I've got a son that's a world-class scientist. I've got a daughter that is a top-notch businesswoman. And I've my oldest son works here in Keokuk. He was a product of the trade program at Fort Madison High School. And he was educated at Indian Hills and at Kirkwood. And he's used that to work for Khan Communications. We try to pound the square peg into the round hole, and it just doesn't work. We don't need to do that. I think if we find resources to invest in education, we're going to get a much better return than say what we've been doing with the pass-throughs.
There's only a certain amount of money. It's got to be spread into the different areas. Are there certain areas that you would say, okay, if we're going to put more money into education, if we're going to put more money into higher education, we might have to take it out of these areas? Are there areas that you've identified yet that say, you know what, if we have to better fund these, we might have to cut these sections? Have you been able to identify those?
I'm gonna have to be honest. No, I haven't looked at that yet. We might have to do what they've done in tax in Kansas and start rolling back some of these tax breaks, because they're eventually going to break the state if we don't. I don't see any way around it. But I think that's one of those things that you get into government and you start looking at, you get more details. But yeah, we are going to have to find the funding, and it should be revenue that comes from people that can pay it, not from small businesses, not from individuals. It should be. Well, let's take, for example, what happened with Apple Corporation. Governor Reynolds just handed them $25 million. Now, Apple Corporation has $285 billion, with a B, in cash. Why do they – $25 million isn't even tip money for them. Why are we doing things like this? And that's – when you get into government, you look at some of these things. And I think we can find, waste. I think we can – find more revenue to fund better investments like education. We need to invest in our kids. We need to invest in our people, period.
Obviously, this seat right now is held by Democrats, been held by Democrats for a very long time in this area. But right now, the legislature is Republican controlled. Are there initiatives, are there issues that have been brought up? Because you'd obviously have to reach across the aisle to the majority party at this point, depending on how the election turns out. But if you had to reach across the aisle to the majority party, are there initiatives that you could get behind maybe that Republicans have proposed? Are there issues like that you could say, you know what, that's something I could get behind, I could work with?
It's interesting that you'd ask that, because knocking doors, I've found out that mental health is probably something that we can reach across the aisle for. I've talked to law enforcement, correctional officers. In fact, we just talked to a woman that works at the hospital in Fort Madison, telling us about the mental health issues that they have, that it's a drain on their resources because they're not equipped to handle this. I think it's not only practical in the economic sense to do something about this, but we have a moral imperative. And I think we talked about the Second Amendment and guns in our in the forum that we had the other night. Listening to the Republican there, I think that there's some common ground, and we can really make some hay with this. I think we can see talk about it where it makes sense. The legislature passed an initiative for 6 crisis centers. They didn't fund it. As one of my bosses used to say, it's a bite of the apple. We've got it there. It was passed unanimously in the House and the Senate. We recognize there's a problem. The next step is to make sure that we have resources to address this problem.
You mentioned the Second Amendment, and obviously it comes down to gun control. There's lots of movements, whether to allow them in certain buildings in Iowa, whether who can have them. It's been loosened up in recent years. Do you see any changes needed? Would you push for any changes regarding gun control here in Iowa?
That is such a highly charged emotional issue. I think what we really need to do before we do that is get both sides together. I've got a great niece that marched for the school shootings in Des Moines. God love her. I want to see her get involved, and I want to see all these kids get involved. But I think they need to talk to people like my opponent in the forum and try to come to an understanding. He seemed like a very reasonable guy on this issue. And I think that we, you know, there are some common sense measures that probably we can do here in the state, because he's talked about the fact that he's a gun owner and he's a gun collector, and he wants to keep guns out of the hands of people that shouldn't have guns. And that should be our aim. It shouldn't be to take guns from a person like this that he has probably zero chance of ever doing anything as you know, in a criminal fashion with guns. You know, he just enjoys guns. It's not my business whether he has guns or not, as far as I'm concerned. And if it makes him happy, God love him. Have at it.
And you're talking about Jeff Reichman, who's running on the Republican side. He's uncontested, but he was in a forum the other night that was hosted, just to kind of clarify that. One more issue I want to get, or another issue I want to get into, is the Medicaid privatization. And there have been reworks, and the insurance providers have backed out of it. What do you think right now is the state of Medicaid, and where does it need to go in the future?
I think it needs to go back to the state. Privatization has been just a disaster. We spend more money. We are the clients that are involved. They get fewer services. They have to go through more paperwork, more bureaucracy. We have providers leaving the state. This has been a disaster. Now, what we had before wasn't perfect. Let's tweak that. You know, that seems like a no-brainer to me.
What's an issue where you, I mean, obviously we're in a primary. The two people in the primary are generally going to have pretty similar ideas. What's an area that you stand out and you really differentiate in when it comes to primary, when it comes to being in a Democratic primary? Where do you differentiate yourself?
Well, I think that the fact that I worked with the unions most of my career. In fact, I was an officer for most of my 41-year career with the BNSF. I didn't work with the party that much unless there were intersecting issues that we had where we thought that they were good with what we were trying to do. We did actually, on a national level, we have endorsed Republicans because they were good on our issues. I think that I look at politics as where Bob has been very strong with the Democratic Central Committee. I looked at it like, well, this is what I want to get done, and this is how I do it. I worked with Republican congressman in Central Iowa on Federal Railroad Administration issues. So I think that I come at it from a practical standpoint of, okay, we might not be able to do this, but if we, you know, if we work with the other side a little bit, we, like I said before, we might get a bite of the apple.
You mentioned transportation. That's something that you've been involved with a lot. Iowa, obviously, road conditions everywhere are always talked about. Should we look at a gasoline tax increase? Should there be a new way to fund transportation improvements in Iowa?
The problem with the gasoline tax is it's a regressive tax. And so that would be another thing that I'd probably have to look at a lot more closely once I'm in office, if I get there. But I would like to look at that and see where we could get revenue, because we don't want to tax people that can't afford it. And so we have to look at getting revenue from the best sources to where we make an investment and it helps all of us. And because if we do this wrong, as I think Kansas and actually Iowa did this back in 97 and 98, as far as their tax program, they actually dampened economic activity. So that's one of the things that I think we have to look at.
If elected, any new initiative, any idea you would bring with you that say, hey, you know what, this is not being done now. This needs to, any new initiative that you bring to the table?
I think that there's room for improvement as far as rail, and I know quite a bit about that. And so I would hope that I would get to serve on the transportation committee if I'm elected, because I would really like to look at this stuff. I always told our guys when I bring them into the Capitol, when you talk to lawmakers, you have to remember they don't speak railroad. You know, when you talk about Markinoff or drawbars, knuckles, things like that, they just tune themselves out. So I would like to be on the transportation committee and get involved in some things there. I think there's some good things I could do.
Any issue we haven't touched on?
The IPERS issue. It looks like the state wants to get into IPERS, and what they don't realize is here in Lee County, IPERS accounts for $21 million. People don't, I mean, imagine if you roll the dice on IPERS, make it like a 401k plan, and it doesn't pan out. That's going to be a huge economic hit on a place like Lee County. In the state, I think it's $1.7 billion. You know, leave IPERS alone. It's a very successful program, and it's worked for a long time.